Tales of the Left Hand, Book 3, written and read by John Maher. The story so far. Tesca and Yvette prepare to walk among the pilgrims for the first time as members of the Blessed. Chapter 29.
Praise the sun! Called one of the pilgrims as Tesca walked past her, the call taken up by several others and passing through the crowd.
Tesca turned to the thin woman, her eyes burning in a half-starved face, and smiled. He raised his hands to her, left palm facing out, right hand perpendicular to it.
"It will make the sod priest's teeth grind to see you use it,"
Sidois had told him with delighted malice.
"But these poor souls will expect it, you being the son reborn and all."
And Tesca had to admit that the old Malakin had been right. Each time he used the sword and board, the pilgrims went wild, cheering and thanking him as if he'd given each of them a plate of food. The Blessed provide the necessity of hope, he thought, understanding at last what Donal had meant. Behind him, Sidois was smiling broadly, touching the outstretched hands of the pilgrims with his right. In his maimed left hand, he gripped a battered copy of the Book of the Triad that he'd picked up somewhere. By cradling the book to his chest, he concealed his missing fingers rather well. Tesca understood the importance of that. While most of the pilgrims here were new arrivals from Eastern Terrandor, and probably had never even seen a ship before they set sail for Maipor, many of the pilgrims predating Kelisandra's arrival were Malakin, any one of whom might count fingers and come to an unpleasant conclusion. Despite the danger of that, Tesca had to admit that he needed the pirate here. Yvette had been right. The pilgrims expected one of the Blessed to know the Book of the Triad word for word. Without Sidois to coach him, leading him into the correct prayers and gestures, Tesca knew he would have disappointed many of the pilgrims he'd seen and spoken to this morning, and it was only the adoration of the pilgrims that kept the sword priests at bay. Two of the acolytes accompanied him, Yvette, and Sidois as they made their way through the camp. Liam was as cheerful and enthusiastic as he'd been yesterday, even leading the pilgrims in their chants. He was a strange balance to Padraic, who remained silent and somber, keeping the press of pilgrims back from the objects of their devotion with taciturn efficiency. Tesca noted that the acolyte stayed particularly close to Sidois, listening to everything the old Malakin was saying to the throng. Kelisandra's eyes and ears, Tesca knew, seeking more evidence against us. At the start of the morning, when the barn doors had been opened, Tesca, Yvette, and Barza had stepped outside. The morning light had made Tesca wince after so many hours in the dark barn, but as his vision cleared, he saw five of the sword priests awaiting them. Angus was there, flanked by Liam, Padraic, Danis, and Desmond. Desmond had been standing watch at the barn door during the night, and with a quick salute, using only the sword portion of the blessing, he exchanged his post with Danis.
"I leave the Blessed in your care," Desmond said to his fellow acolyte.
"And they shall be safe within it," Danis replied, setting his quarterstaff on the ground and standing ready.
"Get to the wagon," Angus said to Desmond. "You can sleep as we ride. Another good night's work, praise the sun."
"Praise the sun,"
all four acolytes replied in unison. Angus now turned to Tesca.
"Travis, you're ready to go among the faithful?"
"We are," Tesca replied, taking Yvette's hand.
Irritation flickered across Angus's face, but the sword priest did not object.
"You're starting for Maipor this morning."
Angus gave a yawn.
"Aye, and glad for some rest in the wagon. Somehow, I didn't sleep as well yesterday as I otherwise might have."
Tesca chuckled.
"I'm sorry if the cheering kept you awake."
"There's no regrets to be had for receiving a blessing," Angus told him. "But I thank you for the concern all the same. Mayhap when I return from Maipor, we can talk of home again."
"I'd like that."
"The Triad has guided your steps thus far," the sword priest told him. "Put your trust in them, and you'll not go astray."
He gave Liam and Padraic a nod.
"Watch them close. Bring them back safe."
"We shall," both men intoned, as Angus and Desmond strode off in the direction of the farmhouse.
Barza clapped Tesca on the arm.
"It's always daunting the first time you go among them, but you've your wife at your side. Take comfort in that."
"I will," Tesca replied.
He looked down at the shorter man and noticed that although Barza was facing him, his eyes were turned away, looking at something past Teska's right shoulder. Everything all right?
Fine, fine. Oh, there's one thing we all do when it's our turn outside.
Bring back the tally of those who've passed away overnight, Teska asked. Of course we can do that.
Good man. The triad smile upon you.
Barza gave Liam and Patrick a nod and retreated back into the barn, Danis shutting the door behind him. Teska glanced in the direction that Barza had been looking and saw the short hill where he'd been healed. A short distance from the death tents was a field of stakes, with rags of white cloth tied to the ends, turning slowly in the morning breeze.
The graveyard, Teska decided. Barza was looking at the graveyard. There's no way to see it from inside the barn. The hayloft door faces the wrong direction. He did that yesterday as well when he came outside to greet us.
Yvette took his hand, her fingers entwining with his.
Is there a route we are expected to take through the camp?
Patrick looked impatient.
You should know that already.
Liam flashed him an angry look.
They've not done this before.
But he gave Yvette a kind smile.
The blessed walk where they will, but all of the faithful will wish to see you, especially those who cannot walk. And though many of them cluster near the gate, there are others who remain in their tents. To see them all, I would walk each row once before walking any a second time. And when you're near the gate, Patrick warned, the monks will come out. Try to talk to you, they will. Invite you inside the walls so they can study you.
He shook his head.
Stay away from them. Your place is out here, with the faithful.
I don't understand, Yvette objected. The monks follow the ways of the triad as well, don't they?
Patrick snorted.
Funny way of showing it. Only pray to the father they do. Put the son and daughter off in side rooms, an inch of dust on their altars. Keep their gates shut to the faithful, but one of their precious scholars comes riding up the road, those gates fly open faster than a...
He broke off, swallowing his next words.
Scholars, Sabrians, and worse.
Worse? Teska asked.
You've no need to worry on that, Patrick said with another shrug.
He gestured toward the tents.
Best we were starting.
Teska and Yvette fell in behind Patrick as he began walking toward the fence surrounding the farmstead, Liam following.
I've never seen a Sabrian before, Yvette asked, looking back at the red-haired acolyte. How many are in there?
One for sure, Liam told her. Saw him, I did, and his fellows as they left the city, day before he joined us. Think there's more, though. How many you seen?
He called up to Patrick. Patrick glanced back.
Two or three. The one you met, with his little friend. Then there's an older one, wears glasses. Think I've seen another one at times.
Teska nodded, guessing the Sabrian Liam spoke of was Grievous. The timing was right, and the way both sword priests had grown angry mentioning one of Grievous's companions was further indication that they now knew who Kerla was. He wondered who the other Sabrians might be. The Abbey's reputation has extended farther than I thought. As they crossed the scraggly lawn, heading for the campsite, there was a stirring of movement along the fence. A cluster of pilgrims had gathered there during the night, and they began to get to their feet, cheering and shouting when they recognized Teska and Yvette. Sidois was waiting for them at the gate in the fence, coming through it before they reached him. Patrick stiffened as the pirate walked across the grass, a rustle of excited comments swirling through the watching crowd as he did so.
I trust you had a pleasant night, Sidois said to them as they came together in a group hug.
We slept well, Yvette agreed. And you?
I have a tent of my own now, the pirate said. One of the faithful piously offered it to me. It would have been a horrible insult to refuse.
Teska chuckled and began to withdraw from the hug, but Sidois tightened his embrace, drawing his younger companions down to their knees, kneeling as if for prayer.
We need another private moment, the pirate said in a whisper as the crowd quieted.
He glanced at Teska, his eyes narrowing.
Quickly, what do the blue light and the Hall of Demons mean? These fools have been asking me since yesterday. You were shouting about them the day we arrived.
I know that now, Teska said. Merritt and Bela told me when they came back to the barn.
We need to come up with an answer, Yvette said.
I've already done that, Sidois said. Now don't look at me like that. I had to. They wouldn't give me a moment's peace until I told them something.
What did you tell them?
The Hall of Demons is the home of the Triad's enemies, those who sought to stop the Triad from creating the world.
We were told that wasn't in the Book of the Triad.
Not in those exact words, no. But demons did try to prevent the Triad from building the world, and according to the book, they seek to destroy it still. I simply gave them a point of origin.
And the blue light?
Well, fortunately, blue is the color associated with the Father. The book speaks of the Son defending the Father and Daughter as they made the world, but at one point, the demons grew too strong for the Son to withstand alone. So the Father rose from his labors to stand by his Son, and he drove the Horde back into the darkness, while the Daughter healed her brother's wounds.
He smiled at them.
I added a detail that a great blue light shone from the Father's eyes, and it was that which drove the demons back to their hall.
Yvette nodded. We should get started. This prayer's taken long enough.
We'll be all right. These folk are used to long prayers. There's one last matter,
Sidwa said, looking at Teska.
Follow my lead and stay close. Do what I do. There are some things you'll be expected to say, responses to things they'll say to you, but for the most part, silence and a smile will get you further than a sermon, understand? That idiot who came out from the barn yesterday, Merritt, he's got it all wrong.
Of course, Teska said. The sword priests don't want anyone preaching sermons in case we say something they don't agree with.
Yes, Sidwa replied, but that's not my point. The pilgrims don't want to listen to sermons either. They want you to listen to them.
I'm not sure I understand, Teska said.
You will soon enough.
He flashed them a wolfish grin, exhilarated and eager to begin.
And remember, if you're not sure what to do, you can always fall to the ground and have another vision. They'll love that.
He took their hands in his own and began to rise, drawing them up with him as one, the crowd noise suddenly swelling.
We three are united once again, the old pirate called, turning to the crowd with a wide smile, raising his arms,
Teska and Yvette following suit.
Give us leave to come among you, hear your woes, and lead you in prayer.
The pilgrims cheered, their numbers already greater than they were before. Beaming with delight, Sidwa headed back through the gate, plunging into the joyous crowd with his younger companions, Patrick and Liam a step behind. The rest of the morning had been something of a blur to Teska. The constant motion of the people around him, their shifting faces, and the ever-present sound of chanting took him back to the swirling memories of the fever dream. At all times, they were surrounded by dozens of people, pressing in as close as Liam and Patrick would allow. Desperate, grasping hands reached past the acolytes, plucking at his clothes. Through it all, he kept Sidwa's advice in the front of his mind, setting his face in a gentle, friendly smile, breaking into a warm grin when he made eye contact with anyone. He touched every hand within reach without hesitating, even those that were scabbed or gnarled with deformity. Besides knowing that the pilgrims would not expect one of the blessed to flinch from touching them, he recalled Barza mentioning that none of the blessed had suffered so much as a head cold since being healed. Taking his body's other improvements into consideration, Teska suspected that he had little to fear being in contact with these people. He also thought that if any of these folk around him suffered from contagious ailments, they were living so close together that such diseases would have long since spread through the camp. They might be sick or crippled or both, but they were far from weak. These were the survivors, the remnants of all those who had begun the pilgrimage, hardened by their toil until they were as tough as boiled leather. And following Sidwa's example, he listened to them. Drawing various pilgrims to him at random, he asked them their names, where they were from, and how long they had been here. And he quickly realized that they weren't talking to him so much as through him. They were telling their stories to the Triad, seeking a portion of the grace that had healed him, and when he gave them his blessing, they looked as if a great weight had been taken from their shoulders, sinking back into the crowd with a smile. He noticed that Yvette and Sidwa were being treated with the same reverence as he was. Several times he heard both of them addressed as Blessed, or their individual titles of Daughter Reborn and Father Reborn. He noted Patrick's frown deepen each time he heard them addressed this way. Yvette listened to a pilgrim's request and, with a kind smile, stepped out of the path. With Liam at her side, she crouched down at the entrance to a tent. Tesca saw one frail hand extend from the dark space within, which Yvette took as she spoke quietly to the infirm occupant. A short time later, she brought her hands together in front of her bowed face, cupped as if she was holding water in them. Then she spread her hands, letting the imagined liquid spill out. It was the daughter's blessing, known as releasing the tears, and the pilgrims received it with the same joy that they did Tesca's blessing. As the morning came to a close, Liam and Padraic led them to an open area a short distance from the camp, where they were given a small portion of food and water for lunch.
"Have we even progressed through half the camp?" Tesca asked. "Close to it," Liam replied.
He picked up a stick and quickly sketched the shape of the camp in the dirt.
"Camp's shaped more or less like a wedge. The tents are arranged through the wider part of it. You've been through the top half of them."
"And the point of the wedge is where the frailest of the faithful gather,"
Sitwa observed,
"aimed directly at the abbey's gate. Not a very subtle message, is it?"
Yvette took a long drink of water after finishing her food.
"I see no permanent tents there," she said, pointing at the group sitting before the gate. "Do those poor folks sleep in the open?"
"No, sister, I mean, blessed," Liam replied. "Each morning they leave their tents and crawl, limp, or are carried to where you see them."
"Why?"
"The monks won't let us set up tents in front of the gate," snapped Padraic. "Blocks the road, it does, and they'll not allow anything to interfere with their precious scholars."
He glared up at the gatehouse.
"Sometimes I think we should just set some tents up anyway, and see what they do about it."
"What does Kalisandra think of that idea?" Tesca asked. Padraic looked back at him.
"You're a fighting man, you know the way of it. Never draw a sword before you're prepared to use it."
"She's waiting until we're ready, then. A fight's coming?" Padraic scowled.
"Ask her if you've other questions," he said, before turning away.
Yvette gave Tesca and Sidwa a serious look before changing the subject.
"I see a lot of those poor souls are huddled under lean-tos, staying out of the sun. They don't set those up themselves each morning, do they?"
"Oh, no, blessed," Liam replied. "Many of the pilgrims came down here with someone healthy assisting them, just as you did. They're the ones who set up the sun shelters for our weakest brethren. Near half of those here suffer no ailment at all, you know."
Yvette looked surprised.
"Bela mentioned her own husband. He is one of those?"
"Graham," Liam nodded. "Aye, good man, that."
"Graham," Yvette repeated. "But no one we've seen today could be described as in good health. Where are he and the others?"
"Work in the fields," Liam said, "getting them ready for planting. Or foraging for more food in the woods beyond, repairing the farmhouse, preparing the meals. There's many tasks that need doing."
"Them as can do the harder work are put to it," Padraic chimed in. "Each does what they can, so each gets what they need. It's a good system. It works."
He glanced at Sidwa.
"No need for changing it."
"None whatsoever," Sidwa agreed, giving Padraic a wide smile.
He gestured to a woman moving swiftly on crutches toward the invalids from the other side of the camp.
"I see that everyone does their part."
"Aye," Liam agreed, smiling, "and she more than most."
"I've seen her before, at the farmhouse," Tesca said. "Molly, isn't it? Kalisandra's daughter?"
"Aye, Melisandre to be precise, but we all call her Molly. She's out here every day when she's the strength to do so, tending to the folk most in need, bless her heart."
Next to him, Padraic nodded in agreement, his hard expression softening.
"She moves on those crutches as if she was born to them," Sidwa noted,
watching the young woman expertly maneuver through the crowded invalids and stop next to one of them, smoothly slipping her crutches out from under her arms as she dropped down to sit by the frail woman.
"She must have been rather young when she began using them."
Liam nodded with a sigh. "Fell under a moving wagon when she was 6. Both legs broken, never healed straight."
"Very sad," the pirate said. "It must be hard for her mother."
Padraic looked at Sidwa.
"Why?"
The Malakin shrugged.
"I can only speak to the joy I felt when I saw my son come down from the tents fully healed. To come here with such hope and see many others receive the gift while her daughter struggles on."
He bowed his head.
All I can say is that I know she must yearn to feel the joy that we have felt."
He let his comment linger in the air for a moment before raising his head and moving forward.
"Let us join the mademoiselle in her labors."
Patrick and Liam stared after him before following, Liam looking confused, Patrick scowling and suspicious. Tesca and Yvette fell in a few paces behind them.
"That would explain why Cassandra originally came here," Yvette said in a low voice. "I suspected as much when I saw Molly in the farmhouse. Do you think that's why her mother stayed as well?"
"It's surely part of the reason," Tesca replied. "Maybe Molly can tell us more."
Yvette nodded.
"If we spread further apart, like as not, Patrick will follow our father, and love-struck Liam will follow me. You should be able to approach the girl."
The three blessed moved through the gathered pilgrims in a rough line, gradually spreading further apart. As Yvette had predicted, Patrick stayed close to Sidois, while Liam wavered between Tesca and Yvette, though he finally joined Yvette when she asked his help in raising one of the pilgrims to a sitting position. Tesca, left on his own, moved toward Molly at a slow but steady pace, pausing by each pilgrim to ask a question or two, perhaps give a blessing, or join them in a simple prayer that Wick had used on the cutlass before the battle with the Li Rouge.
"May the son fill our hands with strength, may the daughter fill our hearts with love, and may the father fill our heads with wisdom. So may it be."
When he reached Molly, she was seated next to one of the invalids. The man was sitting up and trying to grasp a water skin, but his hands shook so badly that he couldn't maintain his hold without Molly holding the skin steady. He drank several long gulps of water and sighed in relief.
"Feeling better, Oswald?"
Molly asked in Terrandon, taking the water skin back and securing the top.
"Ah, you're a lifesaver, girl," the man breathed with a contented smile.
He began to lean back down onto the mat beneath him, but another wave of tremors began to take him, which made his gentle descent impossible. Tesca darted forward to catch him.
"Rest easy, brother," he said, easing the man into a prone position.
The man looked up at him, startled and relieved for the help. Then his eyes went wide in recognition.
You're Travis!
"I am," Tesca said, speaking Terrandon as well.
"Thought I'd come out this morning, see how you're doing."
He looked up at Molly, who gave him a nervous smile.
"We meet again, sister. Feeling better today, are you?"
Molly was confused for a moment.
"Better? Oh, aye, much better, thank you."
She looked up, surprised to see Yvette and Sidois a short distance away.
"Oh, all three of you are here. Your wife and..."
"Father," Tesca said. "Well, father-in-law, to be precise."
"Father reborn, you mean?" she threw back, looking cross. "Heard what they're calling you, I have. It's not right. Triad don't take mortal form to walk among us. They've the Illyrium for that."
Tesca was trying to decide how to reply to her when Oswald suddenly clutched Tesca's arm with a shaking hand.
"Give me your blessing," he gasped. "A soldier in the king's army, I was. Turn back the Kefi at Four Creeks, Baraton, and a dozen more battles besides. Ready for the final muster, I am."
Tesca thought about what to say, then took Oswald's hands in a firm grip, absorbing the tremors that shuddered through the man's body.
"Two nights ago, Oswald, believe the final muster was called for me, I did. Seems the Triad have more work for me yet in this world. Mayhap it will be so with you."
The older man's eyes grew bright, enraptured. Tesca looked at Molly.
"Not for us to know what the Triad's purpose or plans are, but I'll say this, Oswald. So long as you hold true to the Book of the Triad, there will be a place awaiting you in the final muster. On that day, may the Triad accept you into their care," he said, remembering the last rites Donal had given him. "May the daughter take your pain and speed your passing. May the father weigh your sins and judge your fate, and by that judgment, may the son best know where to place you in his armies."
Oswald's trembling lessened, and he relaxed against the ground with a relieved sigh.
"Son reborn, thank you, blessed one, thank you."
Tesca gave Oswald's hands another squeeze before releasing them. When he looked back at Molly, she was gazing at him with wonder, and for a moment he was struck by an imagined resemblance. Rose would have looked much the same, he thought. Different shape to the face, but the hair and eyes, roses were the same color as Molly's. Weren't they?
Triad chose well with you, they did, Molly said, a wide smile breaking across her face.
Before Tesca could say anything, however, he heard the pilgrims closest to the abbey begin to shout and call. Turning his head, he saw three hooded monks come out of the small wooden door in the abbey's gate, the door quickly closing behind them. Molly scooped her crutches under her shoulders and rose quickly, looking worried.
Quickly, she urged. Come away.
Why? Tesca said, remaining where he was as she tugged on his arm.
Here for you they are, she hissed. Don't let them take you inside.
On her crutches, she had no leverage, making her effort no more than a token gesture. But Tesca would have resisted her in any case. He watched as the monks picked their way through the reclining pilgrims, who stirred and began to pray more loudly in their wake. The one in front lowered his hood when he reached Tesca. He was an older man, with broad features and only a strip of dark hair at the back of his head.
Good afternoon, he said to Tesca.
Good afternoon. Brother?
Yes, I am Brother Hollum, the monk replied. You are one of those that these folk call the blessed, are you not?
From a distance away, Tesca heard Padraic suddenly shout,
Oi! Get away from him!
As Molly continued to tug on his arm, her breath hissing through her teeth in short, fearful gasps. Tesca ignored them, offering Hollum his hand, curious to see if Hollum would take it. Travis Durham.
You are the latest to join those ranks, I would venture, Hollum replied, shaking his hand with pleasant surprise. We have not seen you touring the camp before.
He pointed toward Yvette and Sidois.
Have all three of you been healed?
Those two are my wife and her father, Tesca explained, but I was the one who was healed.
How interesting, Hollum exclaimed.
It was clear that he had not expected one of the blessed to actually speak to him.
What was your affliction, if I may ask?
I wasn't sick, Tesca told him. My family came here seeking cures. I was escorting them, but we were attacked just outside of Maipur. I was injured and the wound festered. I was on the brink of death when I arrived here. The next morning, I awoke as you see me. Hollum was about to ask another question when suddenly Padraic was there.
I told you to get away, he shouted, jabbing his staff at the monk's chest.
Tesca shot one arm below the thrusting staff, then swept it high in a rising arc, directing Padraic's strike up and away. As he pivoted, finishing his sweep, he slammed his free hand into Padraic's chest, palm out, driving the acolyte back a step and knocking the wind out of him. Molly, who had been hanging onto his arm, tumbled to the ground in a whirl of skirts and clattering crutches as Tesca twisted out of her grip. Padraic stared at Tesca in wide-eyed shock, his chest heaving as he got his breath back, his knuckles white as he gripped his quarterstaff. Tesca looked into his eyes, matching Padraic's growing fury with icy calm.
Stand down, he ordered.
The show of force and snap of command had worked on merit, but only served to incense Padraic further. His lip curled back in a snarl as he raised his staff. Then an instant later, Liam was on top of him.
No! No! The acolyte shouted, grappling with his comrade. Not him! Padraic, calm down!
Padraic roared in wordless frustration, struggling in Liam's grip, but he could not break free. Tesca spared a glance to Hollum and the monks, who had backed several paces away, their expressions wary. Then, seeing that Liam had Padraic secured, he turned and crouched down to help Molly.
I'm sorry, he began, reaching for one of her crutches.
But a moment later, words failed him. Molly's skirts were tangled about her, the fabric well above her knees. Her legs were pale, slender, and to Tesca's amazement, perfectly healthy. Molly glared at him, the resemblance to her mother suddenly clear, yanking the crutch out of his hand. But then she saw where he was looking, and her expression shifted to one of fear. Desperately, she tugged her skirts down to hide her legs, then scrambled back up onto her crutches.
Wait, please,
Tesca called, but the girl was already limping away at surprising speed, throwing him a single terrified glance as she headed for the farmhouse. Padraic had calmed down enough to stop struggling, but not enough to stop shouting.
You're not to approach or speak to any of the blessed, he roared at Hollum. That is not a term the abbot has ever agreed to.
Hallam corrected him, near to shouting himself to be heard over the rising noise of the crowd around them.
Nor shall he! Our calling compels us to ask questions, not to compel answers!
He pointed to Teska.
This man is the first since Conrad who has been willing to speak to us, and if he wishes to do so, you cannot forbid it. To do so would be to violate the edict of the Father.
You don't rule here,
Patrick shouted.
Actually, Hallam said sternly, we do. This phenomena of spontaneous healing is taking place upon Abbey land. Thus it is the province of the abbot to investigate as he wishes.
He can come down from his precious tower of books and try it himself if he dares,
Patrick yelled, brandishing his staff.
These are holy miracles, gifts of the Triad themselves, and you'll not sully those gifts with your poking and probing.
Hallam stared at Patrick, his temper also rising. But after a moment, he got himself under control and turned away to regard Teska.
If you are willing to come inside, my friend, I give you my most solemn vow that you will not be harmed, and that you may return here any time you wish. We seek only to
He broke off as the crowd noise increased, the pilgrims around them suddenly realizing that Teska was being invited inside the abbey. Teska wanted to accept Hallam's offer, but the growing anxiety of the crowd around them was palpable, and he'd seen how dangerous the pilgrims could be when moved to anger. This crowd surrounding them might be the weakest of the camp's residents, but they were also the most desperate. Moreover, as much as he longed to see Kerla and the others again, he realized the mission might be better served if he remained outside. The situation in the camp was too volatile, the tension between the monks and the sword priests too strong, and at least some of Kelisandra's men, perhaps following the commander's lead, no longer seemed interested in a peaceful compromise. Jordan can't leave the abbey under these conditions. It's too dangerous. Best thing I can do is try to defuse the situation and make things safer for Jordan's extraction. Then an idea came to him, and he raised his hands for calm.
Peace, brethren, he called. I am not leaving you.
Before long, the pilgrims quieted down. Turning to Hallam, Teska said, I cannot go with you, Brother Hallam. My place is here, but I am willing to speak to you, to answer your questions, if you will come again tomorrow.
It's not your turn tomorrow, Patrick began.
I did not return from the dead to walk among the faithful but once a week,
Teska said firmly, turning on him.
If we three choose to tour the camp again tomorrow, we will.
This brought cheers from the pilgrims around him as Patrick stared at him in stunned frustration. Even Liam looked apprehensive at Teska's defiance, but after a moment of silent prayer, his eyes closed, he nodded in acceptance. Behind them, Sidois grinned at Teska, seizing the opportunity with a predator's instinct.
Praise be to the Triad, he cried. We who have been touched by their hands shall walk among you each day, showering our blessings with you. Father,
guide our hearts,
the pilgrims responded at once. Yvette flashed Teska an I hope you know what you're doing look before taking her cue.
Daughter, take our pain.
Son,
Teska called,
give us strength.
These folk lacked the hardiness to shout with the volume of the healthier pilgrims yesterday, but they made up for it with a breathy intensity, their faith pushing them to their very limits. Their response was followed by an echo of rattling coughs and wheezes, which only accented their desperation. Teska looked at Hallam, who was staring at Teska with undisguised fascination.
Tomorrow, then, he said with a formal nod. The Triad be with you.
And with you, Teska replied. Liam stepped up to him as the monks made their way through the pilgrims toward the abbey gate.
Are you sure it's wise to speak with them?
They can do me no harm out here, Liam, surrounded by the faithful, and we may learn more of their true intentions.
Liam nodded.
As you say, blessed. Are you ready to return to the barn?
It's early yet, Yvette spoke up, and there are more here to see today.
Very true, Teska replied, taking her hand. They moved slowly through the portions of the camp they had not yet visited, and it was late afternoon by the time they broke into the open. At the gate in the fence, Donal and Rorik were waiting for them.
Molly must have told them I was speaking to the monks,
Tesca said to Yvette in a low voice.
Or that you and Padraic came to blows, she suggested. By the way, why did she flee so suddenly?
I learned her secret, Tesca said, or at least a part of it. I'll explain more when there's time. Right now, I suppose we'll have to talk with Donal.
Actually, she said, taking his arm, I have a better idea. You've drawn a line in the sand, and I don't think you're wrong in doing so, but it might be good to get some more support if Kelisandra decides to step over it.
She turned back to Liam.
We have decided to visit the fields before heading back.
The fields?
Liam asked, confused.
Of course, the work of the healthier pilgrims now will feed us all in the future, and as you said, few of the blessed visit them.
Padraic gave her a sullen look.
Getting late.
We will see them now, she said firmly. Our brethren in the field should know their labor is not forgotten.
And with that, she struck off toward the fields, Tesca a step behind.
My dear daughter, Sidois said, sounding tired as he caught up to them, I am always pleased to visit more of the faithful, but my old bones were looking forward to a night's rest in my new tent.
He glanced over his shoulder, chuckling at Liam and Padraic, who gave Donal helpless shrugs before trotting after them.
Although, making them follow us all over the camp is something to savor.
You'll get some rest, Yvette promised, but not out here. You're coming into the barn with us. After what Baza told us about Conrad, I don't think any of us should go anywhere alone.
And who is Conrad?
Sidois asked, eyes narrowing. The first of the blessed, Tesca explained. He tried to leave the camp, against Kelisandra's wishes, and disappeared soon after.
Oh, indeed. Well then, daughter, I gladly accept your generous offer. So, why are we going out to the fields?
Yvette grinned at her companions.
I want to find Bela's husband, Graham. You're not the only person coming back to the barn with us.
This work is copywritten 2013 and has been written and recorded by John Maher. If you'd like to learn more about the Freeze, get yourself a bit of swag, or comment on this episode, please visit talesoftheleftand.com, where you can also find a link to our official Facebook page, and if you'd like, make a donation to help keep this series going. Thanks for listening.